You
No.
want the omelet, you have to have a jacket still.
All right, everybody stop. We're learning now. Okay, we've talked about this before. Maybe we'll do it a little differently today, but it's a fascinating topic, and it's obviously, halacha lemaisa as much as it could be, and that is the sale of chametz. But I'm interested in the sale of chametz and how we go about it, but I'm more interested in the history of the sale of chametz because we only got to where we are. And let me just say, where we are, I think, is like if you don't sell chametz, people think there's something wrong with you. Right? Isn't there a mitzvah to sell chametz? Don't you have to sell chametz before Pesach? So, one thing I want to do today is just look at the history of halacha because we pretend that there is no history, but there is. And it's useful and it's meaningful to look at it. Also, what's fascinating about mechiras chametz is that the moment in history that halacha quote unquote changed, but it didn't change, as I'll explain to you. But in theory, you could identify the tshuva and the moment that everything changed, and that carries on till our day. And so it's really useful that way. I think what will come out of it for sure is, halacha lemaisa, the scope and the limitations that make sense for us to observe given the history of mechiras chametz. So let's start. To start, we're going to need a sheet, which I happen to have. Excellent. Okay, I don't know why I can't just move it up. Let's start at the very beginning, and the very beginning for us is a Mishnah. The Mishnah says in source number one in Psachim Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, Kol Sha'a Shemutar Le'echol, so long as it's mutter for you to eat chametz, Ma'achir lebehema lechayav leofot, you could give it to your animals, right? If you could have raisin bran in the morning for breakfast, Erev Pesach, so you could give raisin bran to your dogs and your cats and your chickens and whatever else. And here's what we need. Umocher lenachri. And you can sell it to a guy. Umutar bahana'ato. And you're allowed to get hana from it, right? It makes complete sense. If you're allowed to eat it, so obviously, no isurim apply. Avarz mano, but once the Isur Chametz comes into effect, then Asur Bahana'ato, you're not allowed to do anything with it. You're not allowed to get any benefit or any pleasure from it. Not only that, Velo Yasik Bo Tanur V'kiram, you use it to stoke the fire in your furnace or in your oven or whatever it is. Okay, so basically that's the klal. The klal is, if you could eat it, you can do anything you want with it, including selling it. If you can't, then everything is prohibited. Now, the Gemara right there says, what? But it's so obvious. Source number two, umal chrol achri pshita. Of course, that's the din. Says the Gemara, no. La'afuke mehaitana. No, it's to tell you we don't paskin like Beis Shammai. D'tanya, they have a strange and difficult shita for us. Beis Shammai omrim, lo yimkar adam chemtzol achri. It's prohibited to sell your chametz to a Gentile. Ela im kein yodea bo sheyichle kodem Pesach. It's a fascinating shita, right? You're not allowed to sell your chametz to a guy unless you know for a fact that the guy is going to consume it or otherwise get rid of it before Pesach. Now, why would that be? How does Beis Shammai see the Isser Chametz and the mitzvah of Bittul Chametz? Come on.
Also, Bahana.
It's not that,
Altogether.
yes, it's also Banah, but that's not the point. The point is, they think, presumably, it's an Isser Chavtza. If I own Chametz, I'm obligated to destroy that Chametz. And if I sell it to a guy and he doesn't destroy the chametz, so then I haven't been yotzei my mitzvah. I think it's as simple as that. I think the real question strikes me as, when does this come into effect? Right? If I sell pasta to a guy, Chanukah time, do I need to start worrying Erev Pesach that he didn't finish his pasta? It seems hard to believe. I would guess, we don't paskin this way, so it's just theoretical, but I would guess that probably it kicks in, Shloshim Yom Kodem HaChag, 30 days before the holiday, you have to start worrying about the holiday. I would guess it kicks in Purim time, but I can't be sure. Okay, but who do we
Or is
possibly like? Huh?
that doesn't, I agree with you, it doesn't make sense, but could it also be that there's a question of that during Pesach, the guy will renege or want to, step back from
No,
the
because
sale?
you can't. It's like I sold you my house. A year later, you decide you don't want it. Unconditional sales are unconditional. If you go to a supermarket and you buy something, whatever the return policy may be, that may be. But 3 months later, I promise you, you can't return food to the supermarket. So I don't think that's the concern. Okay, but anyway, Ubeis Hillel Omer, we paskin, kol sha'a shemutar lechol, mutar limkar. Right? So long as it's mutter for me to eat my raisin bran, it's mutter for me to sell my raisin bran. And Rashi explains Beis Shammai Shita, Rashi kodem she'avo ha-Pesach de'kasavri mitzvah alav leva'aro min ha'olam v'lo she'yehei kayam. Right? Why does Beis Shammai have the chumrah that they have? Because they think at some point the mitzvah of bir chametz kicks in on you. And if the mitzvah kicks in on you, you can't get out of it by giving away your chametz. You have to destroy the chametz. Now, by the way, destroying the chametz also means eating the chametz. Right? There's no greater mitzvah of bir chametz than eating chametz. Because when you
That's
burn
the Baal Amar.
chametz, what?
The Baal Amar says that.
Okay, good. Right. When you burn chametz, you're bumping into a potential iser, at least of Baal Tashchis. But when you eat chametz, it's the greatest thing ever. Okay, that's the background. Now let's get to us. Says it Tosefta in source number three. What are Tosefta's? Tosefta's are, minor league Mishnayos, but they're Tanaim. This is very, very early stuff. Says it Tosefta, Yisrael, it sounds at the beginning, it sounds like a joke. Like, Yisrael v'goy she'yu bo'in b'sfina. Right, a Jew and a Gentile were on a boat. Presumably, it's before Pesach. And presumably, the Jew assumed they would get there before Pesach, and they didn't. V'chametz b'yad Yisrael. And the Jew has, and I'll add, because it must be the case, he has valuable chametz with him. Harezo mochro lenachri, v'notno b'matana. He can either sell it to the Gentile on the boat, v'notno b'matana, or he can give it to him as an outright gift. And then the Tosef is very honest. V'chozer v'lokeach mimenu la'achar Pesach. And he can then buy it back or take it back after Pesach. Ubilvad sheyitno lo b'matana gemura. The only condition that really matters is that the sale or the gift has to be an outright sale or gift. So, for example, let's assume you gave it to your Gentile friend on the boat. So it has to be the case that if the Gentile, pardon my language, wants to screw you and keep it after Pesach, you have no recourse. The fact of the matter is, you assumed he would give it back to you. He told you he'd give it back to you, even though that's probably not permitted. But the fact of the matter is, you will have no recourse. If you go to court, there is nothing on record, there's no contract, there's no condition that says he has to give it back to you. So says the Tosefta, which is good news for us, if you do that, and it's unconditional, it works. Even though, it is a harama. It's clearly legal fiction. You're not planning, to own it. You're not plan, you're basically planning to give it to him for a week and to get it back afterwards, which should be illegal. But says the Tosefta, it's not. Now, there's one condition that's implicit in the Tosefta, but it's only implicit, so you may not have seen it. But what's clear in the Tosefta is that it has to be in the possession of the guy during Pesach, right? It has to be you have a room on the Lido deck, so you have to give it to the guy, and he has to take it to the Aloha deck, where his room is for Pesach. I'm showing off a little Bikkias in the Love Boat, which I assume is not exactly the boat we're talking about here in the times of Tosefta. But that's the bottom line, right? It can't be in your house. And that's we'd be fine. Everything in the Tosefta would be great, except for that. And what else? What else is implicit in the Tosefta? What's implicit is it's b'di'eved. Yisrael v'goy shahayu born b'sfina. They're not talking about, you know, Yisrael that who's going to Arizona for Pesach, right? It's a b'di'eved situation. He's on a boat. He has his valuable stuff. He doesn't know what to do with it. So the halacha found a way for him to get out of it. Would you then say that, you know, if I'm going to Israel for Pesach, I can just sell everything in my house? It's a question at this point. But what's clear is that if the sale is going to work, it has to be that there was physical transfer of the chametz from your possession to the possession of the Gentile. And that's made even clearer, you know, in the 1500s by the Beis Yosef. Source number 4 says the Beis Yosef, because of a truma sadesh and siman kufchav, mi sheyesh biyado inyanei chametz, v'rotze letitam legoy, chutz labayit. Right, those are the two key words. You want to sell your chametz to a guy. Chutz labayit. It's not in your pantry. Right? It's not in your freezer. It's not in your refrigerator. It's in the...
Lost your voice. We lost your voice.
You're breaking up. You're breaking up, though.
This is very honest. Votogo. You know, you can't hear me. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Now we can.
Now we could, but you were breaking up for a while.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll try to hold the cord. Maybe it'll work better. Okay. So the Beis Yosef is, you know, we'd be done except for the fact that it has to be chutz labayit. It has to be matana. Now we can do matana gemura. Chutz labayit is harder for us. And then he tells the story. Voto hagoy haYisrael makiro. He's your neighbor. You know this Gentile. V'yodea bo shelo yiga bohem hagoy klal. You trust this guy completely. He's not going to touch your chametz. Elo yishmerem lo ad la'achar Pesach. He'll watch it during Pesach. V'yachzor v'yidneim lo. And then he's going to give it back to you. It's a zero risk transaction. Yeira says, it appears to me, Dishari, it's mutter. Rak sheyit name lo b'matana gimura b'li shum t'nai. It has to be unconditional gift. O sheyim kerein lo mechira gimura b'davar muat. Or you sell it to him, it's a real sale, b'davar muat. You know, it's worth $1,000. He gives you $50. And presumably, if he wants to, the way we do it, right, if he wants to actually own the stuff after Pesach, he'll have to give you $950 balance, what's remaining in the on the contract. Otherwise, it will revert back to you. Okay, so, you know, the Beis Yosef doesn't seem excited. And he says, Yei Ra'eli, it appears to me. So, you know, it doesn't seem like it's Lechatchila. But there's no question that the Beis Yosef is Matir on the condition that it's Chutz Labayit. I can't emphasize that enough. If it's in your house, it's not going to work. And we understand why. It doesn't make intuitive sense that I sold it and it continues to remain in my pantry. Okay? A few years later, the Beis Yosef grew up to write the Shulchan Aruch in source number 5. And he kind of doubles down on his position. Says the Shulchan Aruch in source number 5, V'im mechara o nitano le'ino Yehudi shemichutz labayit kodem ha-pesach. But if you sell it or you give it to your Gentile neighbor and he takes physical possession of it before Pesach, afal pi sheYisrael mecharo le'ino Yehudi, v'yodea bo shelo yiga bo klal, even though we know the guy and he's not going to touch it, el yishmerenu lo la'achar Pesach, v'yachzor v'yidneinu lo, he's going to give it back after Pesach, mutar. Right, so interesting. Originally in the Beis Yosef, he wrote, Ye Ra'eli Dishari. It appears to me to be permissible. And here he seems to say, Mutter. Maybe more people were doing it. He's saying, absolutely, it's Mutter. Ubilvad Sheyitnanalo Matana Gimura Belishum Tanai. So long as you give it to him as an outright gift, no conditions whatsoever. Oshim Kurenalo Mechirag Mura, he sold it to him. Absolutely. Bidavar Muat, with a small down payment. Aval. Matana al menat lahachzir lo mahani. But if the way you do it is, you know, I'm giving you this gift on condition that you give it back to me after Pesach, then you have recourse. Then it's not a real gift, it's not a real sale, and it's not going to work. Okay, that's how, you know, life was, and that's how Mechiras Chametz worked until the 1600s. Now, just a word about that's how Mechiras Chametz worked. I think, I have no proof of this, but I'm pretty sure, I think it worked that way because nobody had any chametz, right? There were no processed foods. There was no refrigerator. There was no freezer. You got up in the morning, you went and you bought some pitas. By the next day, they were spoiled. So overwhelmingly, Jews didn't have any chametz to sell. So I'm not saying they were so frum. You know, they didn't have Oreos. They didn't have pasta. They didn't have processed foods. They didn't have, you know, my great-grandparents. I don't think they were frummer than me. Maybe they were. They didn't sell any chametz. They didn't have a pantry. They didn't have, what would they have sold? Didn't make any sense.
Alcohol.
Okay, maybe. We'll come to alcohol. And, you know, let's come to alcohol now. Since
plus, while we're on it, the reason they may have kept the chametz in their house is because they only got a small down payment and they were keeping it in their homes, the Jews, until they got fully paid, which is a commercial, you know, way of doing things.
No,
so, you know, I think,
but I made the opposite point, which is,
yeah, I know.
The Jews didn't have it in their house. And the reason they didn't have it in their house is because that would undermine the authenticity of the fictional sale. The chametz has to be in the rishus of the guy. Now, all this changed in the 1600s. This is a good time for me to mention that next Friday or Motzei Shabbos, I will be in Poland at the grave of the Bach. So I can't give the shiur next Friday. Henry, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. This is no, you know, I'm busy all day Friday. I know the schedule. There's no way it's going to work. Anyway, let's do, before we look at source number 6, this is the key source in terms of the development of the sale of chametz. So it's a Bach whose name is Rabbi Yol Sirkis, who was born in 1561 in Poland and died in 1640. He was the Gadol Hador after the Rama. His son-in-law was the Taz. And he, in an incredibly honest moment, and I think this is really how halacha develops, he was faced with a situation that no posek had been faced with before. What did most Jews do in Poland for business, you know, in the 1600s? The answer is they sold alcohol. Jews cornered the alcohol market. And for the first time, there were Jews who had, I don't know, thousands and thousands of dollars of chametz. And it was not possible for them to transfer, you know, for them to move the chametz to the house of a guy. Let's say you're a Jew, you owned a distillery, right? There's thousands of dollars of chametz there. You can't just, you own the warehouse of schnapps. You can't just carry, you know, hundreds of boxes of schnapps to your neighbor's house. It doesn't work. So what?
We're losing you again.
Losing you.
Excuse me?
Losing your voice.
All right, I'm trying as hard as I can. Uve medinazo, sherov masa umatan hu biyayin saraf. Says the Bach, where we live in Krakow, most people deal with schnapps. V'ef shalahem lemachram legoy michutz labayit. It's just not practical. You can't move all the schnapps to some guy's basement. Bifrat, in particular, lemachazekim beordina. Let's say you have an ordinance from the government that allows you to sell schnapps. You can't do it. So unbelievably, the Bach says, Yesh lehatir b'inyan zeh, we can be matir, sheyimkor legoy kol hachametz shebecheder, v'gam hacheder atzmo yimkor legoy. Right? The Bach's incredible heter is this. If you can't, you know, if you can't move the chametz, so sell the warehouse. Don't just sell what's in the warehouse, sell the actual warehouse. And if the sale is good, and we know the sale is going to be good, right? That's the Beis Yosef, that's the Shulchan Aruch. We know that's the din. Well, then the result will be that the chametz is not only owned by the guy, but it's in his physical possession because he now owns the warehouse. Now, a side point, but I think it's really, really important. What did the Bach just do? Everybody recognized the Bach changed halacha, but did he change halacha? Absolutely not. He changed the facts, right? And that's the key to things that develop in halacha that look like they changed. The halacha never changes. It can't. We don't have a mechanic, and even if we did, we wouldn't want to use it to change halacha. But if you can change the facts, the same halacha will be applied differently. And that's what the Bach did, right? He basically figured out a way. Well, you can't move all the chametz to the house of the guy, so make the warehouse the property of the guy. Now, the Bach has some chumros, and you know, you need it to make sure this works. Having said that, he says, Umihu, tzarich limsor legoy gam ha-mafteach. So it's very important, right? Presumably in those days, there weren't like 10 keys to the warehouse. The way I imagine it, you know, there's like one gigantic wood key or metal key or whatever it is. So says the Bach, it's got to be the case that you not just transfer ownership, you transfer the actual key, the actual access to the warehouse. De'im lo kein, if you don't give him the key, kevon de'das Yisrael lachzor v'liknos chametz ze'achar ha-pesach, since it's the intention of the Jew to actually be kona the chametz again after Pesach, havale kemachski. Okay, so he says it's like renting out your house but keeping the key. Your chiyuv is to do bedikas chametz because it's still your house. Next line, da'la socha levdok leferish ri. Okay. V'lo dami lemisha kana be'echer midarki haknos v'nishar maftech bi'ad ha-mocher. He says it's not the same as you made a kinyan and you kept the key. The bechametz, and this is an honest moment, he says in chametz, yesh la'achmir, it's an issur d'oraisa. You got to be machmir with respect to chametz. V'su, in addition, kevon sheha maftech b'yad Yisrael. V'yachol li'kaneis l'cheder v'litol ha'chametz misham. Let's assume that the key remains with the Jew, and he can go in and out on Chol HaMoed, and he can go in and out, and if he wanted to, he could take the alcohol. Says the Bach, lo samcha da'ate degoy de mechira gumurahi. The guy is not going to believe and not going to have smichas das. He's not going to have gemiras das that it was a real sale. Ella sover de'eno mechira. He's going to think it's not a real sale. Ella lahasir me'alav isser chametz. It's just a trick to get out of the isser chametz. Va'al kiyotzu b'zeh kozav rav yirucham b'shem bahag u'bilvad shelo ya'arim. Now, the fact of the matter is, of course it's a sale just to get out of the Issa Chametz. That's the only reason you're doing it. That's why you're selling it to him for 8 days. But the fact of the matter is, because it's a fictional sale, because it's legal fiction, says the Bach, you have to cross all the T's and you have to dot all the I's because it's too iffy otherwise. You got to do all the things that you can do to make it appear to be real, starting with the key and starting with the fact that you have no access to the chametz on Pesach and only he has access, which makes him believe that he's the owner of the alcohol, which makes him believe that he's the owner of the distillery, which leads to the Gemar Das that the whole sale is based on. Comments? No, Morte?
The only issue with this is insurance. Right. So when you sell a warehouse to the guy, you're not going. That's the only problem that I don't know if we could solve today.
Because without insurance, he doesn't own it. Is it illegal to own a warehouse without insurance?
No, because I'm maintaining the ownership. If I sell it, right? If I sell it to Jose, right? So Jose has
no reason to be racist. But okay, fine.
He's not Jewish. To John. I sell to John, right?
When I was in high school, I used to be an aide for the Rebbe of my shtiebel who sold it to Bill. Bill was the custodian at the South Shore Yeshiva at the time. Bill was a black guy who, I promise you, did not speak a word of Yiddish. The Rebbe was a little white guy with a big white beard who didn't speak a word of English. So I remember thinking to myself, is this real? Does this work?
So Rabbi Willig has a problem with that because the bill doesn't have the money to buy all that chametz. That's why he...
Right. Okay, so it happens to be Rabbi Tendler was the rabbi who I think was most careful about this. Rabbi Tendler sold all the chametz in Muncie to a vice president of UPS, who A, had the money, and B, had the trucks to pick up all the chametz if he wanted to. Right? You know, he worked for UPS. Rabbi Tendler had a lot of chumros, which I think were useful. But you're 1,000% right. You know, there's every reason to believe with respect to, you know, let's say today, not to knock it, but let's say today I go on the internet to Chabad.org and I live in Hawaii, you know, and I sell my chametz in Hawaii to some guy who lives in Crown Heights, if there are still any guys who live in Crown Heights. Is this smichas das? You know, it's hard to take it seriously.
No, Ellie, interesting. Today, I think the world is changing just the opposite with, you know, Amazon, eBay, and everything. Today may be the first time where this type of transaction is legitimate.
So it's interesting. It happens to be that the rabbi of our shul in Efrat holds like Henry. And he's like, I don't want to buy chametz. I don't want to sell chametz. Go on the internet. Go to Tzohar. Go to the Rabbanut. Because nowadays, that's how people sell things. I don't know how comfortable I am with that, but that's exactly the point Henry's making. We live in a time where sales are done on the internet, and, you know, maybe that does make it better. But, you know, the issue remains the issue, which is, you know, how likely is it? Let's say, look, the Bach's Heter, which we rely on, we don't rely on anymore. Meaning, the guy, when you sell chametz in Teaneck, do you give the key to your house to the guy?
No.
But you
so there was once a time that
you give him the number where that there's access to the key if he wants. That's the only difference.
Okay, that's not what the that's not what the Bach said, right? The Bach said without the key, there's no smichas das. I'm not questioning anything. I'm just saying it's a level away from the Bach. I was once in Poland. Always works out this time of year. You know, Rav Gigi was with me. We were talking to guys, and we were at the kever of the Bach. And I said, oh, we should talk about the heter that the Bach, you know, that everybody relies on, that the Bach gave with respect to chametz. And Rav Gigi said, the Bach is rolling over literally right now in his grave with what we've done with his heter. But okay, that's what happens. So that's the 1600s. I'm sure that this continued into the 1700s because of a Shut Chasam Sofer in source number 7. First, let's read the English underneath it. Rav Moshe Sofer, Frankfurt am Main, born in 1762, died in 1839, right? He was recognized as the Gadol Hador. And he had this fascinating quandary with respect to Mechiras Chametz. Look at source number 7. He says, V'hine, Bihiyot Adayin Hagaon Moreno Rav Baruch Frankel Zatzal Av Bezdin Tekila Kedosh of Leipnik Bechayim. When he says the previous Rav Rashi of Leipzig, a German city whose name was Baruch Frankel, was alive, Ira Maase, the following Maase happened. Right? It's like living history. Shehilshinu Malshinim Eitzel Sareha Medina Demerin. What are Malshinim? Vila Malshinim Al Tihi Sikva. What are Malshinim? Okay, well, they're bad people, but they think you out. They're people tattlers. They're lush and hard dicka people. Okay, so what they say? They went to the Sarei Medina and they said, "She Yehudim mochrim chemtzam bishtarot b'li shtempel." Jews are selling their chametz, and no one's paying the stamp tax. Right, that was a significant source of income for the government. So, you know, they're accusing the Jews of tax evasion. Right now, no one wants to pay a stamp tax for a sale that's going to be reversed in a week. So that was his complaint, right? The stamp tax, which he calls Chotam HaKira, I think Kira is Kaiser. It's not 100% clear, but the government stamp, the stamp of the Kaiser. Ukisheba hadavar lifne hachasid kaira. This is not Kyrie Irving, by the way. When the case came to the chasid, the kira. Now, this is just a point about reading tshuvas. It's fantastic. What's the result going to be? You know it already by how he describes the person. if the Kira is a chassid, he's going to rule for us. Right? So he says it came to the chassid, the Kira. He said, no, Amar HaDavar Yadua, it's well known. She'ein zeh masa'u matan shel tagar. It's not a real sale, a real business sale. Ela inyan dat, religion. It's a religious thing. Al kain, therefore, ein zeh b'chiyuv shtempel. They don't have to pay the stamp tax. Okay, so great. That's great. Except what? What are you going to do? The Kaiser just said it's not a real sale. So he says, Va'al yidei zeh nolad k'tzat safek b'lev haga'on zatzal. So that's why Rav Baruch Frankel became concerned. De mashmat sounds like de medina de malchusa pasul ashtarahu. It sounds like the sales contract would never be enforced, you know, under German law. Now, first of all, that's an interesting question. Does it matter at all? Does our sales contract for purposes of chametz, does it need to be enforceable in secular court? Or is it enough that it works halachically? Right? That's a big, big question. But without answering that, says the Chasam Sofer, who's usually known as a huge, huge machmir, he says four full lines from the bottom, Ulevavi lo ken yidme. I don't think so. I'm not concerned. Why? Ki hashtar kosher hein bidin Yisrael. First of all, the contract works halachically. Imbo hagoy lahutzi mekho bidayanim, hareu shelo hein bidin umos holam. He says, but it's also the case if the guy wants to take permanent possession of the chametz, it'll work in German courts as well. However, ela she'az kishiyitvenu b'darkei umos ha'olam tzarich l'shalem tfilah hashtempel. He says, the Kaiser just said, you know, if you're buying it for a week, if you're giving a down payment of $50 rather than, you know, the value of the chametz at $50,000, you don't have to pay the stamp tax. But if afterwards you're going to pay $50,000 for the chametz, of course you're going to have to pay the stamp tax. Achakaira b'chazto v'yashru noto, because the Kaiser is such a tzaddik and he's so straight. Omar sha'al kiyotze b'zeh lo hitil olash temple. In the initial stage, he doesn't require you to pay the stamp tax. Kevan she'ein tama kona u'mocher l'der tagarim. It's not a real sale for business purposes. Ela lahafkia me'isur chametz. It's just to get out of the isur chametz. Va'al kazeh lo hitil ol mas hashtempel. The stamp tax is not intended to get people who are doing it for religious purposes. It's to get people who are making real sales. If after Pesach the guy wants it, he wants the distillery, he wants the warehouse, then he's going to have to pay the stamp tax. Okay, so here you have, first of all, it means that the same process was going on, you know, in the 1700s and almost certainly into the 1800s. The issue of whether it has to work in halacha or not is not really answered by the tshuva, because the Chasam Sofer thinks it's going to work in secular court. It's just a technicality that you don't have to pay the stamp tax if it's a gift or if you're just buying it for the week. But if you want to keep it, you will have to pay the stamp tax. Okay, a similar issue was faced by the Divrei Chaim, the Tzanz Kloisenberg Rebbe, later in the 1800s, which is why I'm sure that the process continued into the 1800s. And his question was what language the contract should be written in. Says the Divrei Chaim in source number 8, Ubal karchach tzrichim anu lezeh, delo mahani shum shtar ba'olam b'zeh b'dinehem. He says, there's no, the sale of chametz is never going to be upheld in a secular court. Decho gazar etzlam de mechira kazo shemaisa lahafkia isur, eina mechira klal. In secular courts, it's never going to stand up. It's a fictional sale. Umishum hachi ein tzarich shtempel. So it doesn't require a stamp tax. V'chol ha'arkaos lo yechazku ha'mechira azol yishana malas kvo torato v'yeda. Ask anybody, ask any lawyer, he says. It's not going to work. Kikenu, that's the fact. V'im kein, mahu michtirateinu imeinu moil b'dinehem. So what's the point of selling chametz if it's not going to work in secular court? He says, ela vadai de'ein lanu rak din shepaska lanu ha-Torah. He says, I don't care about secular law. I care about halacha. V'lachein ein chiluk klal bein im nichtav v'lashon Ashkenaz. Therefore, it doesn't matter if the contract is written in German. Oh, v'lashon HaKodesh, it's written in Hebrew. Right? All that matters is halacha. And, you know, it happens to make a lot of sense. The Isser Chametz is not a real Isser. It's a halachic Isser. Right? You know, secular law doesn't prohibit me from owning Chametz on Pesach. So says the Divrei Chaim, it makes sense that the heter of Mechiras Chametz is based completely on halacha, not on secular law. And the fact that they don't charge you a stamp tax and the secular courts, whether he's right or not, I don't know, but secular courts would not honor the contract. It doesn't matter. What we need is for a Beis Din to honor the contract. And if a Beis Din honors the contract, it's going to work. Okay. So that's how the process worked, you know, from really the time of the Bach in the early 1600s till certainly the time of the Divrei Chaim in the late 1800s. And maybe it worked that way into the 1900s. You know, I'm old, but I don't remember. But then the world changed, right? And then the world became a world of processed foods and people going to Costco and owning a lifetime supply of pasta. You know, everything changed. Even bread, you know, if you put it in the fridge now, bread stays for weeks, right? So, you know, and we have refrigerators and we have freezers. And the need for selling chametz became...
For months, for up to a year, a lot of those products. Weeks, there's not even...
Okay, all good. Whatever it is, you know, the facts changed. And we didn't have the Bach to help us at this point. By the way, I'm not sure the Bach could have helped us. Maybe, you know, not every halachic problem has a solution. But okay, that's the world. And my sense is, and you get this like when you read Reb Zevin and things, but I don't have a source for it. You know, originally, how did it work? If you had alcohol, so you went to your neighbor, maybe you went to your employee, and you arranged a one-off sale. But of course, if we ask ourselves, you know, if we were all responsible for selling our chametz, it would be a disaster. Because there's a lot of halachos that we don't know. There's a lot of information that we don't have. And presumably, you know, that's what happened. You had all these people selling their chametz by themselves, and there was no standard contract, and people weren't careful, and presumably it was a disaster. And so then rabbis got together, and they decided, you know, that mechiras chametz should be done uniformly and should be done through, you know, the communal representative, who almost always is the rabbi. And there are two ways to do this. One way is you sell all your chametz to the rabbi, and then he goes ahead and sells, you know, the chametz to a Gentile. Most rabbis don't want to do that. I certainly wouldn't want to do that. I also wouldn't want to be a rabbi, so that's good. But the bottom line is, you know, why would you take on ownership of all this chametz? The other way to do it is how we do it, which is you appoint the rabbi, your shaliach, to sell your chametz. Now, there's no way around the fact that the sales that we do are questionable. You know, they really are. Because if they're based on the Bach, and the Bach's whole thing is, okay, I sold the warehouse, and therefore the chametz is now in possession of the guy, you know, we don't do that. It's hard. And the idea that you would sell your pantry seems questionable. And the whole thing seems questionable to me. It's really difficult. Especially now, here's where last week's shiur and this week's shiur come together. If you go to your pantries now and you open it up, so you're going to see, you know, it's wall-to-wall chametz. And you tell yourself, what am I going to do with all this chametz? You know, I have no choice but to sell it. But the real truth is, even nowadays, most of us don't own that much real chametz, right? All the spices in your cabinet, you have 10,000 spices. I don't know what cumin is. You know, we have all this crazy stuff in our house. Yes, we're not going to use it on Pesach because it doesn't have an OUP. It doesn't have a Rabbanut Hachsher. And the Chumrah that we have now is anything that's not marked OUP is Chametz, right? Which leads to what I think is the law of Halacha, which is every Chumrah has an equal and opposite Kula. I made that up, by the way. So that...
Rabbi Willink said that all the time. Every chumrah is a kula. So yes.
Well, watch what happens. Because when I open my pantry, all I see is chametz. So I tell myself, you know, thousands of dollars, I'm going to have to sell it. But not everything that doesn't have an OUP is chametz, right? I'm not going to use the garlic that doesn't have an OUP. But that's because I'm frum. Well, that's because I'm crazy, not because it's chametz. You could leave it in your closet, right? Every single thing you have in your closet, you know, ketchup and maple syrup and all these things, at most, they're kidneyos. As we saw last week, kidneyos is not chametz. It doesn't even have to be sold. So what's left? What's left is, you know, bread. And despite what Henry said, most people don't keep bread for a year. Most people don't have lifetime supplies of bread in their pantries or in their freezers. Pasta is a problem, right? You know, Oreos, real cookies, those are problems. The solution is, and not to brag, the solution is like my wonderful, beautiful, sneistic wife, who's also insane, right? The day after Purim, all the chametz in our pantry is out on the cabinet, is out on the counter in the corner. And your job is to eat the chametz before Pesach, to spend the month eating chametz, doing the mitzvah of bir chametz, and making sure that at the end of the day, you don't have any chametz.
She put now, all your schnapps out on the counter also?
So thank you for saying that. So I, because I'm extremely frum, or mostly because I don't like alcohol, I don't have schnapps. And so like I sound like a show off. Yeah, because I could get rid of all my chametz just by eating it. But Lemaisa, even Jackie Schlanger would have to agree that it's easier and it's more of a sale to sell this one box or this one cabinet where all my alcohol is, which is very, very expensive, as opposed to like writing on some form for the rabbi, you know, well, it's every pantry in my kitchen and it's every, you know, every closet in my bathrooms and it's all kind of toiletries. There's no need for that. And it undermines the seriousness of the sale. And I'll tell you this, I once had to go into someone's house on Chol Moed Pesach. This is a family that's well off. They were in a hotel for Pesach. You know, I don't know what a hotel on Pesach costs, but I understand that it's very, very expensive. And like sitting on the counter in the kitchen was a half a box of Oreos. Like these people could afford to give the Oreos to their housekeeper. They could afford to get rid of the chametz gumbor. They just don't think about it. You know, they sold their house. They went away for Pesach. Aside from the fact that, you know, they're being mevatel the mitzvah bir chametz, it just seems like a bad idea.
Yeah, they're not mevatel.
Okay, anyway, that's my rant. Now, there is a reason to not sell chametz, and that's the last source in source number 9. That's the Tzitz Eliezer of Waldenburg, who died not that long ago. Jackie, when did he die? You always correct me on this. I don't remember. He was a Haredi posek, very, very well respected. And he had our question. A rabbi turned to him. In source number 9, he says, 2006 is the answer for when he passed away. Okay, so he's contemporary. She'elatenu ashniyahi, alasher pa'amim rabot, hu nishal me'anoshim she'nisharu lahem divrei chametz, she'hem yikrei erech. Right, the rabbis asked, from time to time, let's say the people in this community are all from, but from time to time, somebody discovers something very valuable Erev Pesach. Kimo motzarei basar v'dagim mukpaim shemu'uravim b'chametz. Right? They found a package of schnitzel. Now, the chicken itself is obviously not chametz, but breaded schnitzel is, you know, is chametz gamur. So he says, what are you going to do? Ki michad gisa, from one perspective, mi sheyirtze lehachmir v'yizrok et ha-motzarim halalu Hare lechora yavor alav min hatorah debal tashvis. Right, and from one perspective, you say, okay, I'm going to be really frum. I'm going to throw out the package of schnitzel. But that isn't that textbook bal tashvis? Umeidach gisa, from the other perspective, hare sof sof yesh mitzvahs bir chametz. Right, there's a clash of halachic values. On the one hand, there's a mitzvah to destroy chametz. On the other hand, there's an Isser Torah to destroy things that are valuable and that can be eaten. Va'al kein eich yesh linhog b'inyan zeh. So he turns to the Tzitzel and says, how should I paskin? How should we behave? Right? Now, this goes back to Morty's Baal Amor, which is obviously the best thing to do is to search out and know all of your chametz in advance so that if you have to eat pasta for dinner for 2 weeks in a row, you'll do that. And you won't have to throw it out, you know, and you'll get rid of the chametz that way. Or if you find a package of breaded schnitzel, so you'll have it for dinner for a week till you finish it. Okay, but how does he paskin? So no one's going to like the answer. It says that Tzitzel has a tshuva, da'avid kemar avid, u'da'avid kemar avid. Do what you want. You know, I don't feel comfortable telling you, but he does. He hints at it. He says, v'hamachmir. Now let's point out, what does v'hamachmir mean in this context? Is it a machmir in the Isser Chametz, and so he's going to throw it out? Or is it a machmir in Baal Tashchis, and so he's going to save it? So he actually means a machmir in Chametz. V'hamachmir einenu over klal uklal al Baal Tashchis. Don't worry about it, he says. You're not going to be over the Isser of Baal Tashchis. De'ein kol mitzvah limkor chemtzo. You're not being mekayim a mitzvah when you sell your chametz. You may be avoiding Baal Tashchis, but that's not really the halacha. Umekayim eifo ikra dedina hamitzvah sasei tetashbisu. It is a mitzvah. What are you going to do? It's a mitzvah. On the other hand, he says, v'hamekil gam keinenu over al iser. A person who sells his breaded chametz is also not going to be violating an iser. V'chutz ma sheruba deruba inshi. He says, most people do sell their chametz. If you own a makolet in Israel, he says, you're going to sell your chametz. Mochrim b'mechiratam gam chametz be'en. They sell real chametz. Not only that, v'notnim lahem kitav hechsher shemicharo chemtzam kedin. Right? You may not know this. But in Israel, you wouldn't buy from a makolet after Pesach unless they have a tu'udah attesting to the fact that they sold their chametz, and they sell chametz gomor. And he says, Yadana gam b'talmidei chachamim ugdolei Torah, od mehador hakodem. He says, I know many gedolei Torah from previous generations, shemecharo gam chametz ben. They sold real chametz. Umotzo echag ha-pesach ha-achron, hoyu mechabdim bohem b'nei Torah shebo lechabdam ulechalkam ad seit chachag. Right? These people make a party, Motzei Pesach. They take out the chametz that they had sold, right? Sfaradim call it Maimuna. It's a big deal in Israel. It's basically a chametz shav olav Pesach festival, right? Because no one makes all these cakes, Motzei Pesach. They're cakes that were made before Pesach, that were sold during Pesach. So he says, basically, I can't tell you what to do. My sense is, and he says the last line, Muvan shem mikama bichinot Yoter min hahidur hu zeh shemavaram. He thinks it's a bigger hidur mitzvah, you know, to throw out the breaded schnitzel, if that's what you found, rather than to sell them. That's what it's, my sense is that's what he thinks in his heart. But he can't say, and certainly I couldn't say, never would say, you know, that it's usur to sell your chametz. But I think it's clearly better to not have any chametz to sell. Right, everybody says the same thing, that Rav Lichtenstein sold his chametz every year, and he had no chametz to sell. Right, I really think that it's an example with a minimal of effort, or with a crazy wife. You know, you won't have any. You get rid of your chametz before Pesach. Now, you're right. If you have alcohol, you're not. I'm not suggesting that you drink all your alcohol the month before Pesach. Right, that would be hard. Maybe it would be dangerous. I don't know what you have. Okay, but it's much better to sell a box of alcohol than to sell, you know, all the chametz that I may have in my house that I'm not cleaning up. You know, it just seems obvious that way. Anyway, What we saw today, I hope, was fascinating. We saw the history of Mechiras Chametz. We saw that, A, because there was really no Chametz before, you know, the industrial age, before processing, on a one-off basis, people used to allow sales of Chametz, right? And that depended on the fact that you transferred physical ownership of the Chametz to the guy. The Bach came along in the 1600s and changed everything. He said, if you can't transfer physical ownership of the Chametz, you could sell him your warehouse. And if you sell him your warehouse, it gets to the same result, right? That's fascinating for a million reasons. That became the halacha. We saw the Chasam Sofer. We saw the Divrei Chaim, both supporting this idea, whether it has to be enforceable in a secular court, whether it has to be enforceable in a, you know, in a Din Torah. Either way, it worked. And then the world changed. And then people started getting Heinz, you know, 57 sauce and all these things, all these kitnios, all these chametz, all these processed foods. And the rabbis stepped in to help us. And they took ownership of the process. But again, I think we have to be honest from what we saw, that it's not a mitzvah to sell your chametz. And if you sell your chametz, you're avoiding the mitzvah of Biur Chametz. You're not getting the mitzvah of Biur Chametz. Nobody thinks it's a mitzvah. If you need to, so you do it. I'm not challenging that. But I think for most of us, we probably don't need to. And for most of us, with a minimum of effort, you know, we could reach a situation where we're not selling pasta, we're not selling bread, we're not selling Oreos. You know, maybe we're selling some Taroves Chametz. Maybe I'm selling my, you know, my mouthwash, which might be, you know, I don't know. But I think to do the mitzvah, to do it l'chatchila, planning in advance, there's plenty of time till Pesach. People could plan in advance and avoid having to sell at least chametz gamur. Okay, again, I'm not going to be here next Friday. I'm really sorry about that. The next Friday after that is still before Pesach, so we could learn then. Otherwise, Shabbat Shalom, and see you.